It is Saturday, January 2nd, 2010, 10 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, geek news, and in second half, your questions and comments about technology. It's time now for GeekSpeak. For those faithful listeners that know that I've been planning on turning off the theme song, this one right here, I decided to keep it for just one more show because I love it so much. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, Slacker, and Political Junkie. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We have Al Luckow, a new media architect.
Hi, everybody.
And Mr. Ben Squeaky Mike Jaffe, freelance media guy.
Did that squeak go out on the air?
Oh, it did. Oh. It was deliciously squeaky.
Oh.
Why have you moved over there? I can barely see you with these lights.
The light from behind you, from the window.
It's an large irises?
Yes, I have huge irises. They're larger than my eyes.
If you've seen the movie Avatar, Ben looks like that, except he's not blue.
Yeah.
And nowhere near as muscular.
No, he's not
I'm
muscular.
I'm not quite as tall either.
Yeah. No, he's close.
I also don't live
in
a jungle.
We live more of a jungle.
Wait, yeah. You don't live in the jungle? I thought you were from Berkeley.
Suburban jungle.
Man, when I left that movie and I went home, I felt like it was still happening.
There's medicine for that.
I felt like the place was, there really was a planet like that.
It's an amazing movie.
Because I saw it in 3D, and it's just like, it just grabs you, and you just, you know.
I saw it non-3D, and I was very impressed with it. I mean,
it is an amazing.
Avatar? Yeah, oh yeah, I loved it.
Miles?
Didn't I talk about that?
Miles, you can't nod on the air. You have to say yes.
Yes.
Did Ben talk about Avatar last week on the show?
I don't know.
I praised it heavily, highly. Maybe I dreamed that. Did I dream I was on GeekSpeak?
Maybe I didn't know what Avatar was at that time.
We should have our radio show in 3D.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually had a similar experience to you, Al, because when I left, everything was still in 3D.
Yep.
And I couldn't shake that feeling. I don't know why.
I know. It's still, right now, it feels that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the movie theater and you're in 3D.
I'm pretty sure we did talk about this last week.
And you were there.
But that was last year, Ben.
And you were there.
That was back in '09.
That's right.
Yeah, giving any spoilers, something I thought was interesting was people giving commentary online that they thought it was anti-technology, and I just did not get that at all.
Right. No, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Anti-violence.
No, yeah.
But not really that either, because they were violent people.
Yeah.
That was a pretty interesting movie. I thought the story was, it was okay. But the world that they created was just amazing.
I also thought the character development was pretty good, except for one. The corporate guy, I thought was too dimensional.
Avatar. Well, yeah. I thought that the corporate guy, what about the colonel guy? The military
no,
guy?
Actually, I thought he was good.
You think there's people like that?
I know there are people like that.
But. Wow. Okay, so we're talking about the movie Avatar, and now we're going to stop talking about the movie Avatar. And we're going to start talking about Velcro.
Oh, yes.
Because that's more interesting. Mm-hmm. It also, yeah, go on.
I have a friend that actually...
Wait, we really have a news story about Velcro?
Yes.
I just want to talk about Velcro.
Well, okay. Then I'm going to talk about Velcro here. Right. I have a friend who, actually it's his wife, who used to work at this fabric slash craft store in Capitola. And she used to say that she would see these guys men come into the store, and they just sort of walk in the door, and they stand around a little bit bewildered and looking around and just kind of randomly walking. She always would just go walk right up to them and show them where the Velcro was, because inevitably that's what they were there for. Like 90% of the time, where's the Velcro? You know, that's why they went to a fabric store. Now, there is a new kind of Velcro.
Wait. You're not going to explain that?
Well, men like Velcro.
Okay, go on.
Pretty much that's all that means.
All right, okay, good.
And we do. I mean,
it's true.
We're always trying to think of new ways to use Velcro. Oh, maybe I can use Velcro for that.
Well, I put a hard drive on the back of my computer
with
Velcro.
He did.
Works well.
Yep.
You know, I've been to Beverly's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had the exact same experience, but I wasn't looking for Velcro. So there, I beat the trend.
He was looking for what? Pink fabric?
No, I was looking for the stuff that's like, it's got little hooks on one side, it's like a cloth, and the other side it's like a soft mesh.
Oh, hook and loop fastener material.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Hook and loop fastener.
Well, now
I don't care if it's made by the Velcro Corporation.
Velcro. Oh, Velcro is the brand name. Huh?
I think it is.
Now there's a hook and loop fastener.
Right.
There's a Velcro that's made out of steel.
Dun dun dun.
It's a real man's Velcro. It was developed at the Technical University of Munich.
Wait a second, because first off, let's talk about Velcro a little bit. Let's talk about hook and loop fasteners. So what's actually happening is that all those little tiny loops, the little soft side, so there's a whole bunch of loops, and these hooks come in and they embed into the loops, and when they try to pull away, they hold onto the loops. And the sound that you hear, actually some of the loops are actually ripping. Sometimes it pops out, but sometimes they rip. And that's why Velcro wears down. That's why you need to buy new Velcro.
Well, you use a lot of Velcro with your audio sound stuff.
Yeah,
audio cabling,
as much
all
Velcro
that
as I possibly can
deal with that. Yeah,
and some of the newer stuff is kind of like two hook mechanisms that mush together and they don't rip. But the steel stuff, that seems like it would be really strong.
Well, the thing about it is, Velcro, the lock straps won't loosen and slide with strong shear forces. So Velcro, it has a lot to do with the direction that you pull on it for it to work. And the idea is that they can create these Velcro straps made out of steel that you can use for like automotive things where stuff has to be, it gets really hot. Like say you're going to hold your muffler on or something. You know, you could strap your muffler on with this Velcro and it would just stay because of the angle that it would be.
So normally can't use it at high temperatures because the plastic would melt.
And there's other uses like you could use it for curtains in hospitals where everything has to be sterilized in the stuff so there's a lot of uses for it,
not just tennis shoes.
Actually, I don't know if you'd want steel Velcro on your tennis shoes.
What if you had
steel-toed boots and steel Velcro?
I'd want
that's
that.
A man's shoe, but for men,
your shoes would stick together. You'd have to kind of walk with a wide berth there.
Well, it's it's cool, no matter what.
The left foot have the hooks.
No matter how you
right foot have the loops.
Oh no!
You can't brush your feet together.
They also say other potential uses are they could be used to snap aluminum siding onto homes.
Oh cool!
Oh wow!
Which would be you could just kind of press the aluminum siding on, and then it would be there. And I guess you could take it off if you really wanted
to. A few years when the aluminum siding
like no longer in fashion.
And you can readjust it.
Yeah.
change to a vertical striping rather than a horizontal. Nice.
Hey, there's a lot of applications for this stuff, but it's pretty neat.
That's cool.
They call it Velcro on steroids.
I'm going to go to Capitola today and pick some up. Oh, they're probably not selling it yet, are they?
No.
All right.
But it says it can... It can resist temperatures up to 800 Celsius and a tensile load of up to 35 metric tons per square meter.
That's a big piece of shoe.
Yeah, that's a pretty big piece. I mean, they're just trying to be, outrageous. But yeah.
So, could you tow other car? Could you tow your car using Velcro?
That's another use. Towing a car.
Just put Velcro on the front of one car, on the back of the other.
All right, now let's talk about something very old, Miles. Thank
Something
you, Al, for the Velcro.
Very old. Well, old things eventually die, and you end up with no more of them. And that was the case with a specific species of ibex.
What's an ibex?
Ibex is a type of mountain goat or elk somewhere in there, to give you an idea of
a cloven-hoofed creature.
Yes.
So don't eat it if you're Jewish?
If you're kosher.
If you're kosher.
Trying to keep kosher,
Okay, so this is some kind of goat that went extinct.
Yes,
I mean,
and was declared in 2000 to be extinct.
Okay, so relatively new extinction.
Yes. They took some skin samples from a frozen carcass from a little while back, and they used a reverse transfer in the similar way that they made Dolly, the sheep, and they cloned a new one.
Cool.
Now... At the same time, they...
Did it happen to be hermaphrodite, or do they have to do it again to make the species
No, it was
exist?
A female.
It was a female, okay.
But it only lived for a few minutes after being born. It had some lung problems.
When you say born, and you're talking about cloning a creature, can you put air quotes around that, please?
No, it was born.
Did they insert it into a uterus?
Yes.
Okay, great, great, good.
Was into Dolly another species.
Did Dolly happen that way as well?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Dolly was a particular type of sheep... That was put into the egg, so the DNA
of
Dolly, or the sheep that
right.
Dolly was derived from was put into the egg of a second sheep, and then that egg was implanted into a third sheep.
Right.
That way it's very clear that it was Dolly that was there and it was not affected by the other two.
Sure. Okay, so in this situation, they did the same type of thing. Why did it only live a few minutes after birth?
It just had birth defects. I mean, this is going to be the case. I mean, with a lot of pregnancies, you have a certain rate of birth defects.
Well, especially when you're dealing with this kind of work.
Like you're taking dealing with
the genome
this, yes.
and you're duplicating it from one species. Yeah.
Right. Something they found with Dolly was that Dolly had the signs of old age, even at a very young age, because...
Because they're working with...
All the telomeres.
Have already decayed.
Yeah. Already shortened. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've
covered a story where the telomeres were able to be added to chemically.
Yeah, and we also have stories where we talk about telomeres not shortening, where they never do shorten, and it's called cancer.
Yeah.
Or at least Don has talked about that.
Yeah, that's true.
At length.
We won't get into that. We'll
so here's that question. Especially if humans are responsible for extinction, but what if humans aren't? It's hard to say whether humans are responsible for extinction sometimes with a complex system like the Earth. But
you could also claim that every species that lives after one species has gone extinct was responsible for that creature being extinct.
Should we bring them back is the question.
Well, how do they taste?
No, seriously. Delightful. It's like, should they be gone or should we bring them back? Should we only bring them back if we were directly responsible for them dying out, or should we let them die? You know, pandas.
These and other questions can be answered on the
farm. Do we save pandas because they are
cute,
or do we save them because we feel obligated, or we've encroached on their territory, or do we let them die because it's really hard to make them mate, which is really contrary to survival from an evolutionary perspective?
That's what I've heard too. So. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I ask everybody to think about that. That's a very intense and intimate question. Thank you, Miles, for bringing that up. Should we add another species back into the pool of diversity that this planet holds?
I don't know. Well, I think yes, but that's a...
You think yes?
But I think it's
why do you think
question.
Yes? Well, should we do that with every single creature that we could possibly do that with?
Yes.
And should we try to then make the biodiversity on the planet even more and more? And then
separate
what about...
question.
Well, that's not exactly because if the niche for that creature has kind of dissipated, that's why it's dead, then you have to envelop, you have to create the niche again so that it can
survive.
You're
assuming that we're putting it back into the wild.
Just saying let's zoophile it.
No, I'm just saying that I think we should bring them back, whether we put them back into the wild or put them in captivity or have some other...
We should bring it back anyway. But should we bring it back because we want that species to exist again, or should we bring it back because we can? And then the scientists can go, yay, us.
Because we can, and because it increases biodiversity, and
but it doesn't really increase biodiversity in the sense that if you just create it and then you put it in an environment where it doesn't interact with the plant very much, like a zoo, then what benefit are you doing besides making us feel yay we've saved a species?
You can look at it.
I mean, it's not going to then.
There's one of those animals.
And then what about this argument?
Zoos are also another argument.
Miles, what about this argument? What about the argument that if a species has gone extinct, that allows for more space for other species to fill that space, that niche, to allow other species to evolve into subspecies and so on. So, I mean,
in our case, it's humans.
Yeah.
Species go extinct because human beings are expanding out.
But the same sense, if you have a 100-acre wood and you kill all the eeyores, there might be more...
The Eeyores?
Yeah, the Eeyores.
I said 100-acre wood. I had to go with that metaphor. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You know, there's only one
so
Eeyore.
So then you're going to get more bears.
Well, why is there only one?
Even if you don't, decrease the size of the wood or anything, you could produce another subspecies of...
Really? Your postulate is that Winnie the Pooh is going to procreate.
Let's hope not.
We've got to stop that.
Moving on.
Is there going to be like some sort of mitosis with a bear?
Yeah. He eats a lot of honey. Who knows?
Yeah.
Somebody has children. Okay, moving on. Ben Jaffe.
Yes.
What's going on with the polls?
I just want to point out that you said zoophy.
I did.
Is that a new verb now?
I love new verbs.
Are you verbifying on Geekly?
We listen to the same podcast. All right, moving on.
Verbify is not a word. It's neologism. Thank you.
Neologism?
Verbifying.
Wait,
is...
neologism is to create a new verb?
To create a new word.
Okay. So, but Ben just
I thought that was a sniglet.
Wait. So, yeah, but I'm not creating a new word.
But
I have
decided
verb.
Through fiat that you cannot create a new word to describe creating a new word.
That's the one case where it's not possible.
I say by fiat. That is
he
not
does
a
have
lot.
A bachelor's in literature.
That's right.
Oh, you thought after years of teasing you without having a degree that I was going to stop because you have a degree? No.
No, I hadn't expected that at all.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it just reframed it all, you know.
So anyway, thank you, Miles, very much for that story. It was great. Ben, what's going on with the poles?
The magnetic pole, the North Magnetic Pole, is shifting, it turns out. Now, this is something I didn't know anything about until I saw this news story and I researched it. And it turns out that it shifts all the time. In fact, every day. So just to clarify, we're talking about the magnetic North Pole, not the geographic North Pole. The geographic North Pole is the how would you describe that? The point around which,
if you stood there and you would never see, you'd see you'd just things fly around the horizon.
You'd be rotating. You wouldn't be. Well, anyway,
you couldn't
along the line.
Could you were like standing right on the North Pole in the exact spot?
If you stood there, you would notice that the stars never dip and sway. They just go around you perfectly.
Well, with the exception of the seasons, but that's different.
But if you put your arms out, your hands would be going really fast.
That's right.
In relationship to your head.
Absolutely. And you get really dizzy. Your arms would fly off into space. That's
weird.
How it works, right?
This is a really interesting place we're describing here.
Yeah. I'm actually thinking if the geographic North Pole moved, what would it be like?
Whoa!
Yeah.
You guys are so geeky.
The origin of rotation of the Earth on the north and south air. So in any case, that's probably not a great description. But
in any case,
the magnetic North Pole, that is what our compasses point to. Mm-hmm. And it should be noted that they do not describe the same place. Maybe sometimes they do, but not actually.
Not right now.
Turns out the pole actually cycles around in loops every day, about 50 miles wide. Which I didn't know at all. So if you go and try and find the North Magnetic Pole, you probably will just, you'll have to follow it. You'll have to follow it all day because it changes.
And that 50-mile circumference? No, or you said diameter?
About 50 miles wide of a loop.
Diameter. Yes, so that's diameter. That loop of 50 miles still isn't encompassing the geographic North Pole.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily encompass it. And fluctuations in solar radiation is what drives this daily movement. But they've been
measuring.
But they've been measuring the average location each day of the magnetic North Pole. And they found that the average location of the pole is moving. Every day, pretty fast. About 25 miles a year nowadays.
Which direction is it going?
Towards Siberia, away from Arctic Canada.
Away from the geographic North Pole?
Yes. Uh-huh. And it's already moved 685 miles from Arctic Canada.
Wow.
So it's booking it. It's funny. And even crazier than that, it actually appears to be accelerating. So it's actually moving faster and faster away from, you know, what
so we might be seeing a shift.
No, they said that they think that this is just kind of it noodling around in the northern hemisphere, not indicative of
so
it
the one
actually
thing
shifting.
About the North Pole and actually our magnetic sphere in general is that it actually protects us from a lot of radiation. Mm-hmm. Without it, we wouldn't be as successful. We'd be losing a lot more Eeyores.
That's why we
have a different type of Eeyore.
That's true. We might have a different type of piglet.
Yeah, that's why we have the Northern Lights up there, is because that's the one place that the magnetic North Pole allows solar radiation, solar wind particles to come in, and they ionize oxygen and nitrogen. So the other thing
you just did the complicated why is the sky blue, but with the Northern Lights. I'm really impressed. That was quick, too. Three stars for Ben.
Three stars out of how many?
I don't know. 34.
10? 34?
Yeah.
Okay. So
2010. That's our number for today.
Oh, dear. So 1 out of 11. I'm 1 11th. So the other thing that they were talking about is how it's not a pole reversal. So every 1 million years or so, actually a little bit more than 1 million years, the poles flip and you have the North Pole become the South Pole and the South Pole become the North Pole. And some people have been talking about what if the poles flip in 2012? Will that be the end of the world? And no, it won't be, because it's happened 400 times in the last 300 million years.
It'll just be the end of human species, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything will go extinct, but that's
from a Gaia perspective. Who really cares, you know?
But in any case, so the magnetic North Pole is moving, which I found really interesting. I thought it was relatively
static. If you get the right kind of vehicle, can you ride along with it? You know, like a hovercraft with magnets on it?
50 miles in 24 hours. So that's,
nice.
What, 2 miles an hour? So, you know, you could just, that's kind of like a...
You could walk that.
Saunter. You could walk that as long as you don't fall asleep or
saunter,
die
word.
Of frostbite.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
I think I want to talk about Star Trek. Sorry. Al, is that okay with you?
Star Trek. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Here's an interesting little thing. I guess this would have been good for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get, and this is kind of good for Santa Cruz.
The surfing capital of the world.
The surfing, you know, the surf city and all this kind of stuff. You can get a wetsuit that is exactly the Star Trek uniform. And they make both the red shirt and the blue shirt. Don't get the red shirt. They have the blue shirt and the yellow shirt.
They
and that the whole thing, you know, and then the tights.
Is the red shirt one like ooze fish? What is it called when you?
No,
try
you can
chum
get the you can
so
get the red shirt
come and get
if
you?
You're always going alone.
If you're always
but
going
if you're with a group, you don't want to wear the red shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
I didn't realize that some law. We're talking about in Star Trek where the red shirted characters always seem to die to prove the seriousness of the point.
Yeah,
but if you want to investigate that humorously, I highly recommend the movie. Galaxy Quest. No, Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Galaxy.
Actually,
Quest.
All of the, they had it in the new Star Trek movie,
that's
too.
That's true.
He was
Yeah. That was really funny. Well,
okay, moving
well,
on.
These are real wetsuits, 7mm.
That's a thick wetsuit.
Yeah, they're high quality. They're kind of pricey.
Yeah.
You can, it looks like you can get them from Roddenberry.com.
Nice. No way.
Yeah.
What?
But, you know, and of course they have a few other Star Trek things there.
You think?
But the Star Trek wetsuit, it really is a real wetsuit. And,
that's
you
cool.
know, it's a little geeky. Well, a lot geeky. But imagine.
If you had to buy a full body suit.
Imagine being on a surfboard
and
you are wearing what looks to be the exact replica of a Star Trek
It's perfect.
Outfit.
And then you should have like a you know? One of the flip phone cell phones on
just
you.
Just a little.
Right?
Boop,
so know? That people can watch you from the shore and go,
I mean,
what is going on?
When you
on?
Really think about it, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Kind of quirky cool,
you
know?
Definitely a geek.
Yeah.
What I wonder about is Roddenberry.com.
It's probably him. It's probably the corporation. It's probably the family.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because they own
how
the trademark.
Yeah. How many kids did they have?
I don't know. But she's still around.
No. Jean and Majel.
She died.
Yeah.
She died.
Yeah,
we covered that on Geek Speak.
Yeah.
I don't listen to Geek Speak.
He doesn't listen.
All right.
He's not listening now.
What was that?
Nothing.
All right. Whose turn is it? I wasn't listening. I'm going to ask if anyone has heard of a new podcast they like a lot. And you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio KSP. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, and Al Luckow. We are talking about technology, and we can take calls and questions about technology. The phone number is 476-2800. Again, that's in the 831 area code. It's 476-2800. Or you can call us toll-free, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. So please call up. Rick is standing by to take your call and pipe us into the air room. Podcast? Anybody listen to a podcast?
I listen to Geek Speak. Have you heard of that one, Lyle?
I have. I listen to it sometimes. Last week, I haven't.
I thought you just said you never listened to it.
Oh, right. I lied. I never did.
Well, there's
I never lie.
You know, I have a couple of podcasts that I really kind of like.
Just one?
Oh, one?
One. We have to save something for next
week.
Can
it be a video podcast?
Yes, it can be a video podcast. A vodcast.
Terra, The Nature of Our World. It's like a 10-minute long. They're all like really ecologically minded.
Cool.
And they're usually three parts, and they have an intro, and then they have another one. It's like part two, and they're all really well done.
Ben, will you throw that up on the GeekSpeak website?
Terra,
yes. The Nature of Our
the
World.
The Nature of Our World.
Podcast. Thank
video.
You very much.
Yeah.
Video podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And of course, you can do video podcasting through iTunes as well. You subscribe to it, and then it plays on your screen. All right. Here's a new sponsor for us. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, a private university offering master's degree programs focused in advanced technology. More information available at uat.edu/masters. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
Very cool. Exciting.
Right. We're going to take calls, and while we wait for calls to kind of be set up and everything, I'm going to go ahead and go to our next news story, which I believe would be Mr. Miles Elam.
Yes, we're constantly talking about going to new technology to save on power. For example, we talk about going to compact fluorescence or LEDs. LEDs specifically are the new holy grail, so much lower power than incandescents. However, there is always the case of unintended consequences. This was the case in the north and northeast. especially in the Midwest, where it gets very cold and gets covered in snow. And the LED lights were installed as street lights. So you could
stop
save
lights,
power. Yeah, stoplights. So you could save them for save power for a municipality. And it would be a tremendous power saving. The only problem is that when it snows, the LEDs do not grow warm and they don't melt the snow like the incandescents did.
Oh, so you can't see the
lights
anymore.
Which means that after it snows, the snow covers up the lights and it's actually caused a few accidents already.
Hmm. Oh, no. What are those white poles out there? Is that a white, giant white Q-tip?
So how many accidents were we talking about? Were we talking about serious things? Or, I mean, don't people in the snow areas know that even though you can't see the light, it's still a problem? Like, it still
One person in this story is covered as being a fatal accident that could have been prevented by having stoplights that she could have seen.
You know, I just bought, after Christmas, Kmart has all the half price sales and all that.
Yeah.
That's when I go buy all my Christmas
lights.
That's
what I used to do, too.
Yeah,
when I had money.
And this year, I bought all LED lights.
That's the way to go. A lot less energy. But did you get the ones that flicker?
I'm a little bit out of control, and so I probably bought every kind they have.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So next year I'm going all LED.
Good.
If I can.
Yeah. And it doesn't snow where you live, so.
So hopefully nobody will be injured.
And maybe the redwood trees won't burst into flames this year like they did this year.
Yeah, because I do run them up my redwood trees.
Out here in the home, LEDs are wonderful. They're 90%
more
less energy
than incandescent. So here's the thing with LEDs, though, because I've seen a set that is flickering. You can definitely see it flickering. Uh-huh. And it's flickering badly. And I could tell right away that it's a 30 cycles per second
flicker. Oh, you mean
flicker.
The megahertz?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of flicker.
And what's happening is that our power from our walls comes in at 60 cycles per second.
Mm-hmm.
And an LED only lights one direction. You can only if you throw electricity through one direction, it lights the other direction. It doesn't because there's no power that goes through it. So it's polaric. And if you don't change it to DC before it goes in the thing, you'll get it'll be on every other 30th a second, right? And you can see that pretty well.
I'll find out,
so,
I guess.
Yeah, and it's possible that they have a transformer on them, or it's possible that they've got two LEDs at every location and they're reversed. So actually one's lighting.
What about a lens? Would a lens help? Because it looks like they're lensed, kind of.
No, I don't think a lens would help. But if you have on the substrate, you actually have two LEDs and they're biased reversely, then you could get a situation where one lights one direction, one lights the other direction, and then you wouldn't necessarily notice it. Also, 30 beats per second, you might not notice. It depends on the environment you're in.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the home lighting that I've seen has been multiple LEDs. So I could see there being a single transformer that powers all the LEDs.
Yeah. And the thing is, you don't need a transformer if you have enough LEDs. And you can count the LEDs in your string to figure out what's going on. Well, 110 volts comes out of the wall. And if you line them all up in series, so that one goes to the next one, the next one, you divide it by the amount you have, and that's how much voltage each one gets.
Interesting thing about the series, though, like the ones I have now, I like buying the net ones, and I string them on the redwoods, and it says you can't put any more than three in a row. You know,
with the LEDs, that won't be a problem.
LEDs, it's like 35 in a row, which is really like insane, you know? I mean, for that kind of... I'm putting it on my Christmas tree, too, next year.
Yeah, the LED Christmas lights that I have they're 5 watts total. And I used to have an issue of like, oh my God, like if I leave these Christmas lights on all the time, it's going to be a huge power drain.
Yeah.
It's like having a 100-watt bulb on all the time. And then, oh, this is 5 watts.
Right.
Well, leave them on. I don't care.
All right, let's go ahead and take a call. I think that'd be fun.
Okay.
From Coralitas. Bob, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, hi, this is Bob from Coralitas. And I have an HP laptop, and I'd like to... sometimes download audio that I hear directly and then burn a CD from it. And I was just wondering, can I go from the headphone jack to my microphone jack and download, or how would I go about doing
that? What kind of computer do you have?
It's an HP laptop, PC.
Yeah, if you have your headphone jack and then you have a line-in jack as well, then theoretically what you could do is you could grab a male-to-male eighth-inch stereo plug and plug one into the other and just create a little loop there. And what you'd be doing is it's called the analog hole that you'd be exploiting. And you could download something like Audacity, which is an audio program. You can record audio with it.
Uh-huh.
And then you could record your audio from your headphone output like that, once you're done recording, you hit the stop button, you'd save it as a wave or something like that, and then you could burn it on a disk.
Oh, okay. So Audacity is the program.
The only problem with that is you actually have to be there to stop it, to start it and stop it and name it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, well, that sounds pretty simple then.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it if you don't mind doing it that way. There are other tools that you can allow to grab the audio digitally.
How is that?
Well, we had a show a while ago about, what's the application?
Audio Hijack Pro.
Audio Hijack Pro, which works
really
well.
But that's a similar kind of thing. It exploits the analog.
Yeah, but you don't have to loop through. You don't have to have that. And
well, you would have to start and stop it.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless you set up a scheduling thing.
Right.
What is it you're trying to record?
Well, like there's, just programs like off of YouTube and that I hear, I just want to have the audio file. And
well, another thing is,
there are programs that allow you to download the videos directly from YouTube.
Yes, so there are a couple services. There are some web-based services. If you search for download audio YouTube or something like that, you can probably find some of them. And what they'll allow you to do is just copy and paste the URL of the YouTube movie into their little box, and then you press go, and it will extract the audio for you and allow you to download it. And then there are also some other conversion utilities, like MPEG Stream Clip, for example, and you could download the FLV directly from YouTube site using Safari or something, and then you could convert it yourself. But if you can find a good web-based one, that'll probably be your best.
You know, I have one that I use. Mm. It's called Download Helper, and it's a plugin for Firefox, and I use it all the time because it will actually, once you have the video load, the gray part all loads all the way. You can't do this until that's happened. It doesn't have to be playing all the way, but the loading part. You can click on this little file, and it will actually download and convert at the same time. So it'll download and, say, convert your video to an iPhone-compatible video or an MPEG, and and this is free, too.
Do you know if it has an audio converter option?
Well,
for Wave or something?
I'm looking at it right now because I've never just done the audio, but once you can download a, any kind of video file, you have your audio right there. It's just a matter of extracting the audio. I mean, there's a million ways to do that.
Yeah, so if you decide to go that route, then a good converter application is MPEG Stream Clip, and that would allow you to pretty much it's open source, and it allows you to convert pretty much anything into anything else.
Okay, so when because I downloaded one of those programs that grabs the video audio off of YouTube, and it would save the file, but then I'm like, well, where is it on my computer now? I'm not that savvy that I can go into the hard drive, and I'm just trying to,
It should prompt you. These apps should prompt you where you want to save it, or they'll put it in a standard folder.
It does it right when you click on it.
When I have trouble, if I've downloaded something, and I know something is saved or downloaded, and I can't find out where the thing put it, there's a little trick. Most applications allow you to do a find, or most OSs allow you to do a find. You do a find, and you basically look for things that have changed in the last day, and anything that's downloaded pretty much is going to have a save date of when it was, of when you downloaded it.
Yeah.
So then that date will show up, and then of course you have to filter by like time, and you should be able to find it that way. That's the way I find it. And then once you find where the application is saving it, if it doesn't have a good interface, then you'll know that it always puts it there, and you just have to memorize it.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know what? That will actually convert to MP3. So,
oh, fantastic!
Yeah. So Download Helper, Firefox plugin Download Helper, you can definitely download it and convert to MP3.
By the way, I have to say this again. I hate the term analog hole. This idea that there's this...
You don't like reality?
Yeah, there's this out that's this exception. It's no, analog is not the exception. Analog is the rule. Digital is the exception.
Right.
Okay. Like, it's not some loophole you're trying to get. It's how the world works.
That's true, but I would argue that perceptually, in a world where almost everything is digital, analog seems like the exception perceptually. So I think it's legitimate to say the analog hole for people who have computers and everything is digital.
It's a term that was created by people that want to control the content. I don't care for it.
All right.
It's much the same thing as people saying intellectual property, because copyright, patents, and trademarks have very little to do with one another, other than the fact that they are not physical property.
Right. Maybe we can call it the analog trick.
You like the analog trick? No, see, that's the reverse.
Because you're utilizing your analog output.
All right, we'll continue this after the show.
To the line
in Monterey, Summer is calling us from Monterey. Summer, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Okay, thank you. I have an older computer, and when I try to go on Craigslist and respond to one of their ads, mm-hmm. I get the message, the host, all caps, SMTP, in single quotes, could not be found. Please verify that you have entered the correct, entered the server name correctly.
Yeah, the email address.
Pardon me?
The email address. So what's happening is Craigslist, they want to make sure that when you say that you're, you try to go on and respond to Craigslist, meaning filling out a form and hitting submit on Craigslist?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you do that, the email address you're putting in, is it really a full email address?
Well, usually whenever you want to respond, at least with me, a dialogue screen will pop up and
give you that warning.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things going on. SMTP refers to Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. It's how email works. So for some reason on this webpage on Craigslist, something in your system is thinking that mail is important. Now, I'm not sure if it's Craigslist website saying, does that email address actually exist? Let me go look it up. And it goes and looks it up and says, hey, wait, that email address, the server doesn't even exist or respond. You're trying to use a fake email address, so I'm not even going to talk to you anymore. And that's giving you the message. That could be a problem. Or something in your system could be configured strangely that such that when you click on a link or you are trying to do something, your machine thinks you're trying to send email or participate in email somehow, and it triggers that event for happening. So I'm not really sure which it is. And that's the part I don't know how to respond to correctly. One thing I would suggest is you definitely use a correct email address, an email address that works, a full email address. It should.
Well, I'm using their own email that they use in their ad, which when it just pops up and says reply. If you want to, for instance, a job.
So I think what's happening, how do you normally send email?
Well, I usually use the Yahoo or Hotmail.
Okay, so here's what's happening. When you click on a link on a website and it's an email address, it's going to try to open up your email client, your application to this email, but you actually use a web browser for your email. So what you have to do is you have to copy that email address. Just do select it and copy it, or right-click on it. Are you on a Mac or on a PC?
I have a PC.
Okay. Right-click on the email link and say copy, then open up Yahoo and paste that in the to field for your new message, and that will work.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, let's see. Do we have more calls coming in? We do. My gosh, that's great. From Carmel, Will, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, good morning. It's the time of year when I renew my Norton anti-spam on one of my PCs.
Sure.
And this year, it came with a utility, a Norton Utilities disk. And I've had this PC a long time. It runs very well. It did have to go back to Hewlett-Packard once. It's an XP mm-hmm. laptop. And I'm a little nervous. I'd like to clean up my registry, as it says this will do, mm-hmm. but I know it's going to give me a whole list of options as to what I want to leave alone and what not.
Yeah.
I know very little about registries. Am I in danger using a Norton Utilities disk to make my computer run a little faster?
I think it's smart of you to be wary about playing with your registry. Your registry on a Windows machine is kind of the giant meta lookup database thing that allows the OS to know about itself. So it's a very important piece. If you mess it up, you can really mess things up. There's a couple things, though. If it's going to mess with your registry, the first thing it's going to do is say, let's make up a backup of your registry, which it will do. It will also, in that setup, it'll have a bootable disk, which will work, most likely. And you can back up your registry, mess it up completely, reboot your machine off of their disk, get your backup of your registry, and install it back in. This is all process that you kind of is necessary for a good registry cleanup tool. The other thing is Norton's a pretty big company, and if you mess up your registry and lots of people mess up your registry, they call them and complain, and it takes up their tech support time. So they're going to make sure that this works for most people, right? Because if it doesn't work for most people, they're going to be slammed with tech calls, which is not effective business for them. So think about that perspective. You're pretty safe right off the go because it's a big corporation that thinks about their whole model. So to some degree, I'm not that concerned. The questions are going to be kind of complicated. The other thing is, do we think it's necessary? Miles, do you think it's necessary to clean up registry?
I think they can speed up the system.
Ben?
One of the reasons why XP gets slower is because it has so many entries in the registry that has to go and check all those register COM objects.
Ben, your perspective?
I think I'd agree with that. I would just say make a backup of your computer before you do it.
Oh, full backup of your machine.
Yeah, I would say always whenever you do anything that you feel is at all risky, even upgrading your operating system, always make sure that you have a good backup in place. So,
the next thing I'd say about that is make sure that your documents are really safe, and this is always a thing you should be doing. This is a great New Year's resolution for everyone. Get a system in place where you always back up the data and the creation, the stuff that you've created on your computer. Anything you've created on your computer that you care about, anything you want to keep, make sure you have a good backup. An external USB drive is a great way to do this. And if you're doing it that way, and the worst case scenario is you totally fry your Windows machine, then you can reinstall the OS from scratch, which is kind of time-consuming, install all your applications again, and move your data over, and you're up and running, and that will definitely be really fast. In fact, it would probably be faster than cleaning up your registry by itself.
On the matter of having external backup, I have managed in the last year to fry, or not, just to knock over and completely destroy two external USB-linked hard drives. Both of them were in small little boxes. Mm-hmm. Now I've got new ones that seem very stable, and they're much, much smaller with large capacity. It strikes me maybe they will withstand getting knocked around a little more than the
boxes. Don't knock your drives around.
Okay.
Both
the others were accidents, and one, they just tipped over.
One of the things I notice people do is that you'll get a drive, and it has, you can put it on its edge, and that's one of the configurations. You can also put it flat. I always put my drives flat because it really just takes an elbow, carelessly moving something. And then, of course, the combination is you've got your cup of coffee. You're leaning over your computer to deal with the window. You knock your elbow. The drive falls. Then you move your hand. Your coffee spills on your keyboard, and you just have a disaster. So really, just take drives. See if there's any configuration for it to lay it flat. Even if you have an extra part that's supposed to stand on end, just toss that part away or recycle it and put the drive flat on a surface so it's a little safer. And also don't pile a drive on top of paper. Think of the external hard drive as something that's really kind of sensitive and you need to make a space for it, an environment for it, just like you would at your sink or your stove, right? Your kitchen stove. You don't put stuff right next to the stove. You make space for it. Think of your hard drive that way and you'll be good.
Yeah. What about the business of when you turn it off? I mean, some drives say you ask permission or you make sure that nothing's happening, but other ones don't offer that eject command.
I regularly eject with the operating system the drive that I'm about to turn off. Shut down my machine. So what I always do is eject it. And it will give you warnings if you don't, and the warnings are important. You could be smart about it, like Miles, and know that nothing's being written to the drive and just, it doesn't matter, you unplug the cable. But there's a possibility that something's being written to the drive, and if you disrupt that right, you can cause corruption. So I just never do it. I just always go through the OS's eject. And in a Macintosh environment, you take the hard drive that you're kind of eject and throw it in the garbage can, the trash can. In a Windows environment, there's normally like something in the taskbar you can click on, and it will choose which drives to eject. And the problem, of course, you never know which is which. The other way to do it is open Explorer, and you see them, and then you can right-click on it and tell it to eject. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
That was some rapid-fire advice there. That was
It's recorded. You can listen to the podcast.
Bam, bam, bam.
And I don't even use Windows machines. In fact, I don't even use computers at all. All right, let's go ahead and do another news story because I feel like we've been doing a lot of calls. So I have totally lost track of where we are, but I want to talk about – is Al up by chance?
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. What's going on with the – what's going on with the iPhone app? You showed,
there's this really cool iPhone app, and it's called Hipstamatic. What it's really doing is it's a camera app where you can take a picture with it, but it's allowing you to simulate – this old camera that came out in the 80s called the Hipstamatic, and it was this cheapo camera. It was plastic, but you could change the lenses and all that kind of stuff. But the thing about, these cameras we're all familiar with, these, the Holga and all these cameras that...
And if you look at your old scrapbook, your old photo albums, and you look at the old photos that have these really strange different qualities about them, that's why.
Pictures are not really... I mean, at the time, this was the camera because it was cheap, and the pictures are kind of weird, and the color is a little oversaturated, and maybe it's got some vignetting because it's a cheapo lens and all that kind of stuff.
That's when the outside is either white or darker or lighter ring around the outside.
Yeah, and it's got like a white border or a black border or something like that. But what's happened now is that kind of look, it's sort of created a sort of a look, and people are wanting this, and people are actually going and buying Holgas again, these horrible cameras with light leaks and all this kind of stuff just to get these neat effects. Well, this iPhone app actually does all these things, and it's got a really cool UI. And it looks like the camera, and you can just swipe and change the lenses.
And the picture you took of Miles in the car this morning was very cool.
Oh,
it had
yeah.
this, like, darkened quality, and it had dark around the edge, and it was, like, the color was all strange. But
yeah.
the thing that's interesting is that right away the photo looks interesting. It doesn't look just like another iPhone picture.
Right.
You know, there's so many digital cameras now.
Oh, yeah.
All of them have that same quality of just very correct.
Everybody's trying to make things better, but this actually makes it more stylistic.
Yeah.
And granted, it isn't anything that you couldn't do in Photoshop if you
right.
really wanted to, but it's just so convenient on the phone. You can take the picture. You can change the films. You can change the lenses.
I mean, you could email me that picture you sent moments ago right to me from
and
your iPhone.
I can email it. You can even do a simulated flash, different colored flashes, the different weird flashes you used to get. Now, if you get the app, the one thing that's a little weird about it is that when you start using it, you're like, oh, these are cool. But then you realize you only get like two lenses.
Right.
And then to get the next lens, it's like another, you have to buy it like in the app.
Yeah.
But still, everybody's got to try to make a living. And it's still, you're talking like 99 cents.
Can you throw that picture of Miles up on Facebook so our Facebook friends can see it?
Yes, I can.
Cool. Well, not now necessarily.
But maybe I'll take another one too.
Yeah, so. Maybe. Oh, we could take a group shot and make it the thumbnail for today's show.
Right.
All right. Perfect.
It's a cool app though. Hipstamatic. You know, it's based on a real old cheap camera.
Cool.
But it's
thanks.
You know.
All right. Let's go ahead and take one more call for today. I believe it'd be our last call, and it's Dell from North Sacramento. Where are you?
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
I'm just north of Scranton in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Great.
And maybe I'll do this quickly, just lay out the scenario, because as I was talking to you, I kind of went on in my application here. But what I'm doing is I'm sending a laptop to my sister who's never used the computer, so I wanted to make sure I could use some sort of remote control function to help her out.
That's a great idea.
And I tried the Windows XP remote and, setting with a laptop alongside my desktop, and it keeps giving me all these problems with permissions and like that. So I just went to another application. I downloaded this ShareMyPC.com.
That's through a web page, right?
It seems to work but what I was asking is, are you familiar with the regular XP remote desktop, and does it work very well, or is it worth trying to actually...
I'm not that familiar with the Windows one. Ben?
Oh, I was just going to say one problem that you might have with, say, the Windows one is if your sister's behind a router, then you might not be able to get it to work because port forwarding and the router might not be on or something like that. So,
it looks like the remote stuff. It's just like there's so many default things that try and protect you from that sort of stuff. And there's no clues. It just says you lack permissions, and that's it.
I mean, here's the – okay, so first off, the classic version of this is called VNC, and that's actually, I think, the protocol now too.
Well, actually, that's what the Share My PC – there's
everybody
some indications
uses,
that is VNC,
everybody
right?
uses VNC, basically.
Okay.
That's VNC. Anybody know what that stands for?
Virtual networking client.
Yeah, virtual networking client. VNC just is the protocol to control a machine remotely and be able to see everything, right? So all the data that passes through is normally through a VNC protocol. And so there are different applications. I've heard of Ultra VNC. These are all different applications that use VNC, right? And Windows Remote Desktop's the same thing. The next problem is that you have to have a server. You kind of have two things going on. You've got your computer that you're trying to connect to has to be running something, and the machine that you're connecting from has to be running something. And Windows actually can run VNC, and that's what the Windows Remote Desktop thing is running. So you turn that on for her computer, and that's probably okay. And then the client you're using is the one I would be playing with. But the open ports and closed ports is the big issue.
As I was on hold here, I actually made the connection, and it looks like what they do is they format an email. It sends invites, you to join a meeting, and then you can get control, and it looks like you, in fact, do. But so what
those,
you're saying
those
is
middleman
any,
services,
any of them that are based on the VNC would probably be okay.
Yeah. I mean, VNC is the protocol. I would go with a large name. That's the thing, is because...
Do you have one of those large names?
Ultra VNC, I hear a lot of people use it. So try that one. All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, we only have a few more minutes, no more calls. We're going to do a quick resolution thing. Ben, you got a resolution?
Yeah, I already have backups, and so I didn't want to have that be my New Year's resolution.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I decided instead to have my New Year's resolution. I said my New Year's resolution is not to fulfill my New Year's resolution.
bump, bump, bump. That's impossible.
You've already ruined it.
I think I just broke Boolean logic, right?
You've broken everything. Hey, in just a minute, we're going to get the crazy USB of the week live, in person. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, offering master's degrees programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. Classes now forming for January. uat.edu/masters. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. All the stuff we talk about during today's show on GeekSpeak is available to you all the time at geekspeak.org, as are our forums and ability to send us emails. So please do so if you so wish to do so. My name is Lyle Troxell. We have Ben Jaffe. We have Miles Elam. Answering the phones is Rick. He's there almost every week, and we really appreciate him. And, of course, rounding up the geek crew today is Mr. Al Luckow. Hi, Al.
Howdy.
What's the crazy USB of the week today?
Well, this one, it seems a little bit invasive. It's called the USB Birthday Decoration Kit. And what this thing is you plug it into the, say it's like your birthday and you're in an office environment, somebody's cubicle, it's their birthday. You plug this thing into their USB and it powers this like stream of lights, and it's got all these really horrible looking like... streamers and stuff like that. It comes with a birthday hat. It's got a mouse pad that says happy birthday, and it's like yellow, and it's got and it has a screensaver, which that's a little bit familiar to be messing with somebody's computer like that. And it says that it works on Windows and Macintosh. But, and let's see, I was wondering if it played any music. It doesn't say it plays any music, but the whole thing, the lights and everything, is all powered from the USB port when you plug it right into the person's computer. It's a little weird. I mean, that one, I don't know if I'd want people installing screensavers, especially this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we shouldn't get this for your birthday.
I don't think so, no.
Not this year. All right. No. All right, thanks for the crazy USB of the week. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, streaming on the web at kusp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used with permission. Coming up next is Car Talk. Car Talk on KUSP is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County. We appreciate their support. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week. Thanks for listening.